have a game plan and have a playbook and then stick to it, right? So understanding that, you know, not 100% of your buys are going to go exactly to plan.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Birmingham Rental Investor. I am Spencer Sutton, and I've also got my co-host Matthew Whitaker with us, and we're excited because we have Andy Boyum with us. He is the Vice President of Property Management from SFR3, and he's calling in today from California. So first thing I want to say, Andy, is welcome, is number one. And then number two, man, I'm sorry that you have to deal with property managers all day long. That is a rough job.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Spencer. And, you know, happy to be here with you guys, and thanks for the invite. You know, and dealing with property managers, you know, it could be worse than hanging out with you guys for, you know, 30 minutes here on a Wednesday. So what can I say?
Andy, talk a little bit about the name SFR3. Where does that come from?
Yeah, so SFR, you know, obviously single family rentals, that one is pretty self-explanatory. So the three is kind of a dumb or a stupid play on a couple different things. You know, the first is we invest primarily in, you know, tertiary markets. So we're not in, you know, the primary markets like New York, LA, San Francisco, Chicago type markets. And then we're not even really in the secondary markets. So like Atlanta or Birmingham or Dallas or places like that. What we do is kind of look to acquire in areas that are surrounding those secondary markets. So we call them kind of more tertiary markets is the idea there. And then the second piece is kind of like, you know, if we want to, you know, see returns on our SFR portfolio squared or to the second power, we want to go the next level and make them to the third power. So, you know, that's kind of the joke there. So those are both of the ways where the SFR, the three and the SFR3 came from.
That's good stuff. And y'all are an institutional home buyer and y'all actually buy here in Birmingham. But before we jump into Birmingham specific stuff, just for context, you've worked for an institutional buyer that actually went public, and you've got quite a history of buying houses, and then you actually worked for a platform that sold houses. Can you just give people kind of the kind of a rundown of, like, you're pretty deeply rooted in the SFR space?
Yeah, so I'll give kind of the Cliff's Notes version here. But yeah, so I've been in real estate for about 20 years, but I've been in the single family rental space for about a decade of that. So about half my real estate life has been in the single family rental space. So Matthew, to your point, during the last downturn that we saw, so we can call it 2010 or so, you know, I had actually joined one of the first institutional single family rental funds called Waypoint Homes. That was, again, kind of at the bottom of the last recession. And when I joined, funny enough, you know, I was, you know, I'd been working in consulting for a while and was kind of like, saw the buying opportunity, but really thought of it as more of a trade rather than a business. So my kind of thought going in there was, hey, let's, you know, buy some homes for, you know, 50 cents on the dollar, fix them up, and then down the road, we'll sell them for 85 cents on the dollar, make some money, and then I'll move on to the, you know, the next opportunity. But, you know, somewhere along the line, I drank some Kool-Aid, and here I am still 10 years later, right? So I was with Waypoint for, you know, about 4 years and kind of started in acquisitions. We were buying, you know, 500 homes a month in the go days, yeah. All throughout the nation. So did acquisitions for, call it, a year and a half or so, then really transitioned more into the operational space. So now that we own the homes, we got to, you know, fix them up and lease them out and then manage them. So saw that piece as well for a couple of years. And then towards the end of my time there, built out the disposition platform. So from buying them to fixing them up to operating them to then selling them, got a, you know, good amount of experience. And then Matthew, that group did go public in 2014, I want to say. We spun out with Starwood and became Starwood Waypoint Homes. And now the largest institutional group owns those assets, Invitation Homes owns those.
So you have a lot of experience buying and selling houses. Talk to me a little bit about buying during a recession. So we're in the middle of kind of COVID world. You know, the level of, everybody kind of agrees there's going to be a recession. Now the recovery, who knows what that's going to be. But talk about buying during a recession, kind of some best practices that you found when you were working at Waypoint that you think you're going to deploy while at SFR3.
It's a really good question. So during any recession, you are going to see buying opportunities. You're going to see a home that might normally cost, you know, $150,000 sell for $125,000 or, you know, whatever the numbers are. Now, that could look like a great deal. The important thing is you want to make sure that you're not only getting a good deal or discount to fair market value on the buy, you got to make sure that you are going to be able to operate it to an appropriate operating return, which is where, you know, folks such as yourselves and other property managers come in. You got to make sure that, yes, you might be able to buy it for a discount on fair market value, but does your ability then to rent it out at a level that's going to give you an appropriate return, does the rent shake hands with the price, right? So you got to make sure that that piece is in place too. And that's something we learned at Waypoint Homes very quickly. You know, we were very aggressively buying anything that moves, so to speak. But, you know, we learned our lesson very quickly and you know, licked our chops a little bit. You know, we made some bad buys that on paper, hey, we're getting, you know, 50 grand discount to fair market value, but these homes weren't in, you know, good rental neighborhoods. We didn't have the right partners to help us manage them, things like that.
Are there Matthew and I never have bought bad rental houses, have we, Matthew?
Yeah, I was about to say.
We don't know what that's like.
When he was jumping into Waypoint, he was speeding by in a Lamborghini while we were strewn out on the side of the road.
That's right.
That's the kind of picture.
Nobody talks about the, you know, the 95% of the good ones. You know, they talk about the 5% that go sideways somehow, right? So
absolutely. Talk about some disciplined kind of best practices when you're buying houses. You often hear people about sticking to the numbers. What are some things that you kind of mentally institute to try to keep yourself disciplined?
Yeah, so I think sticking to the numbers is one, and kind of going along with that is making sure you understand and know what your buy box is, right? So understanding what kind of risk you're willing to take on, how much money you're willing to spend, both in terms of the actual home, but then also how much money you might be willing to put in to renovate it and fix it up. And then also kind of based on your risk threshold, your risk tolerance, how much, you know, risk reward are you willing to take on? Are you looking for, you know, a 10% cap rate or a 10% return on your money, but willing to, you know, going into that eyes wide open, knowing that the folks that are renting that home might, be a little bit more likely to move or cause damage to the home rather than willing to be, accept a 5% return on your money, but understanding that, the upside there might be more limited. So I think that is kind of, you know, that is fundamental to anybody, you know, looking to invest in real estate in any market, but particularly in a downturn.
And you are focused now, and we're going to get into your job in a minute, on operations. But what did you learn about operations, about operating a company like this from your Waypoint Home days?
So one of the things when I, you know, first jumped in is, that I didn't really understand was you have to be able to operate these homes, right? So the way that you're able to operate, you know, 300 single family homes as opposed to a 300, you know, unit apartment complex is through technology. And utilizing that technology, whether that is you as the principal, as the person who's acquiring it and managing them yourselves, or making sure that your operating partners, your property managers have, you know, good technology and good systems in place is absolutely key. You're not going to be able to operate a portfolio or even, you know, two or three or four single family homes without a good, either your own technology system where you are tracking the data and the numbers closely, or partnering with a property manager and making sure that you guys or that group has, the right systems in place.
And your next stop, you went to a platform where you got to deal with a lot of individual investors. Talk a little bit about some best practices you saw from some of the best investors that bought from that platform.
Right. So after Waypoint went public and spun out, I took a little bit of time off, but then got back together with some of my old colleagues from Waypoint Homes at a platform, a marketplace called Roofstock. So Roofstock is an online marketplace that connects sellers of single-family homes and buyers across the nation.
And we're a preferred property manager. That's how Andy walked into our office one day and we were able to meet. So talk about when you dealt with a lot of, you were kind of on the front lines of individual investors who are probably similar to the people that are listening to this. Talk about some best practices that you saw when you were dealing with the people on that platform.
Yeah, so correct, Matthew and Spencer, we met and worked together, you know, in my Roofstock days. We worked with property managers across the nation. We had a couple partners in each of the markets we were active in. So I was out there kind of crisscrossing the nation and meeting kind of the best in class operators, making sure that, you know, we were partnering with those best in class operators in each market so that when we are making introductions, making those referrals to the Roofstock investors, we wanted to make sure that they were going to have a good experience, a good handoff, and be in good hands kind of post-close. So to your question, Matthew, you know, some of the things that are, you know, more power users or, you know, more successful investors that Roofstock really did was, again, kind of have a game plan and have a playbook and then stick to it, right? So understanding that, you know, not 100% of your buys are going to go exactly to plan. We were joking around before, you know, it's, you're going to remember the 5% that go poorly rather than the 95% that are just kind of bopping along. But sticking to your guns and sticking to your playbook, if you are looking for, you know, a 20, 30 year investment, you know, don't worry about the, you know, 3 months of vacancy that might happen here and there. But stick to your guns and, you know, have a playbook, but what I like to joke around is have a playbook, but write it in pencil, right? So you're going to learn.
That's good.
You're going to have to, you know, kind of make zigs and zags here and there. But as long as you are focused on whatever your long-term goal is, whether that's retirement, whether that's, hey, 5 years, I want to make some money and then flip that into something else. Just as long as you kind of keep your eyes there, you know, you'll be all right.
Talk about any mistakes that you saw people making that were kind of newbie mistakes that you think people can avoid who haven't bought their first house yet.
So how long is this podcast again? No, so jokes aside.
I mean, the top 10.
Yeah. Jokes aside, the biggest one is around, you know, repairs and maintenance and renovation in particular. You know, when you first buy a home, you know, you're making a big investment in a home. And a lot of times you're going to want to not add to that, you know, that capital outlay, that money out of pocket by, you know, renovating the roof or putting in a new air conditioner or whatever it is. You know, and you might be able to get away with that for a year or two, but down the road, it's going to cost you that same amount of money, if not more, you know, than what you could have spent up front to just, you know, fix it and just kind of set it and forget it. Right. You're gonna have upset tenants. You're going to have, you know, more headaches to deal with down the road. So I would say number one, just, you know, understand that there will be construction expenses and repair and maintenance expenses. It's not a matter of if there will be, it's a matter of when they will hit. So just making sure that you're budgeting for that and understanding that. Kind of along those same lines, I would just say knowing that, you know, there is some variability in these homes. You know, yes, you might sign a lease and yes, it might be a great tenant for 2, 3, 4 years, whatever it is, but they're at some point they are a tenant, they are a renter and they're going to move out. So you got to be sure that you understand that you will have some vacancy costs and make sure you're budgeting appropriately so that you can cover your mortgage if there is a when there is a vacancy, right? So, you know, even though you might not be getting rent income, you know, your bank or your lender still expects to get paid. So making sure that is budgeted in there as well.
You know, you have, Andy, you've been around the country. You've met with a lot of property managers, done probably a lot of due diligence on property managers. What are you looking for when you do this due diligence? Like, what are the signs of a good, reputable property manager? Because people that are listening to this podcast, they may be buying in other markets. So what are some of the things that you're looking for?
It's a really good question, Spencer. So there are a handful of things, right? So there's kind of, I put them in kind of three buckets, right? So the first is just kind of fundamental. These are compliance or legal related issues, right? So making sure that they have the appropriate license to do business in whatever state they're in. That varies by state, by the way. Some you need a broker's license, some you might not need any license at all, but understanding that, you know, I would say number two is kind of operationally, how are they set up? So one of the things that I always wanted to double check on is, hey, show me a demo of what property management software you use. And if they pull up, an Excel spreadsheet, that's probably not somebody who's going to be a professional partner that you want to work with. So making sure that they have the right policy, the right systems in place. And then also you want to understand what their policies are. Property managers really sit in between. They're kind of, they are the client of the owner, but they're really the owner's representative when they're interacting with the tenant, of course. So that property manager layer needs to be both responsive to both, right? So they need to be responsive to the tenant's needs. I'm sure you guys have heard the old adage, big smile, sharp teeth. That's how property managers should deal with tenants, right? It's, hey, you want to give good customer service, but if it's the 7th or 8th of the month, and the rent's not paid, then that's where the sharp teeth come in, right? So, but then also what understanding some of the soft skills from property managers too. How are they going to interact with the owner? What is the normal communication that I, as the owner, should expect? Personally, the way that I like to interact with my property managers is, as long as the numbers are looking good and the metrics are looking good, we don't really need to, have a check-in. I don't really need to hear from you. But if something's going wrong, I want the property manager to be proactive and say, hey, Andy, we're having some trouble collecting rent or whatever it is, and here's what we're doing. That sort of thing. So, there's some quantitative stuff, some fundamental stuff. In that bucket, I would also put what's their kind of overall occupancy rate? What is their, average rent collected versus, rent charge, things like that. But then there's the more qualitative stuff where it's more, what's your customer service, experience like and things like that.
I want to jump into kind of your next stop at the institutional buying, again. And one of the things I want to zoom out before we zoom in on what y'all are doing at SFR3, I want to know how you think that institutional capital in our space has changed the environment, the buying environment, especially as it relates to the smaller landlord, the smaller owner.
Yeah, so it's a really good question. So the institutions, keep in mind, the institutional space or the private equity money or things like that, keep in mind, they only represent out of the whole 16, 17 million single family rental homes in the United States, that group only represents between 2-3% of that entire housing stock. So keep that in mind when we're talking about the institutional folks. Yes, they're out there. Yes, they have deep pockets. They have probably more sophisticated technology than a lot of people. But that said, in the grand scheme of things, they are still a very small fish in a big pond. So I would just kind of caveat it with that, number one. Number two, I think it's absolutely, and I'm probably a little biased here, but I think it's a positive for the industry as a whole, just given that they are bringing in, that level and that amount of capital. Two neighborhoods and two major metros. They are, this is kind of what we're doing at SFR3. We're purchasing homes that are either distressed or need a lot of work, a lot of kind of value add renovation work, and we have the deep pockets and the ability to go in and take on a $30,000 construction job. Whereas a mom and pop or a retail investor. They might not want to, spend $30,000 to fix up a home that might only be worth $75,000, things like that. So, again, I would say institutional overall, again, probably biased, but overall a good thing for the industry. But keep in mind that the industry is much, much bigger than just a handful of kind of institutional investors out there.
One institutional investor I met with said that, and I thought this was really interesting, that he felt like the institutional capital had created a new floor that where something like 2008, 2009 could not happen again because there's so much capital out there that's willing to buy these homes before they get to 2008, 2009 real estate prices. So it created a new floor so that it supports the ecosystem, the real estate, the housing system. Any thoughts on his thoughts?
I would agree with him. I certainly don't see, at least in, you know, in our lifetimes, knock on wood, given, you know, current circumstances and uncertainty, but I don't see another, you know, home price drop, you know, in some markets, what was it, 30, 40%, you know, home prices fell. Yeah. You know, it just, there is that backstop. There is kind of that, you know, somebody's going to catch the falling knife, right? And you know, yes, I think you'll still see real estate prices fluctuate. That's just, you know, the way that the market is. But I don't think you'll see things, you know, to that level. One of the things that was proven out in the last cycle, the last downturn, was that while you did see the home prices in some markets falling 30, 40%, nationally, rents actually never went negative. Now, in some markets, they did, of course, but nationally, it never went negative. It either kind of just popped along at, you know, 0 to 1% or was just flat. Now, once people realized that and the institutional money came into the space, you know, it really made single family rental kind of, it was kind of the birth of this new asset class, at least the institutionalization of the asset class. Because if you have rents that are staying flat and prices are plummeting, there will be a point, you know, call it 10, 20%, you know, drop in prices or less, where it makes a lot of sense for an institutional investor to go in there and really start buying aggressively.
And now you're working at SFR3. Talk a little bit about the markets that y'all are focused buying.
Yeah, so just joined SFR3 actually a few weeks ago from Roofstock. And, you know, we're an institutional investor. We're actually a fund. So we've raised some capital ourselves and then also raised some debt. Who, you know, our strategy is, again, like we've been talking about, buy, renovate, lease, and hold. And manage, right? So we are focused primarily in the Southeast markets. So our biggest markets are in South Carolina, Columbia, Greenville. Then we kind of go into Georgia, not, again, back to our thesis around the more tertiary markets. We don't buy in the Atlanta metro, but we'll buy around it. So Augusta, Columbus, Macon, areas like that. We're in, you know, the Alabama markets, Birmingham, Huntsville, Montgomery. And then we have kind of a portion of the portfolios in the Midwest as well. So Cincinnati, Louisville, and then more recently, St. Louis, Kansas City, and Indianapolis. So we're about 1,800 doors or so across those markets. And, you know, we're anticipating a pretty strong buying opportunity upcoming. But even before that opportunity arose, given the COVID outbreak and situations we're dealing with around that, we were buying, you know, between 100 and 150 homes a month or so across all of the markets. So we're a very aggressive and active investor.
Do you have a target like size you want to get to? How many doors you're looking to manage? I mean, to buy and own?
Yeah, we like to set stretch goals. So our goal would be 10,000 homes by the end of this year. Now, we would have to drastically ramp up the buying pace, of course, but so more realistically, probably 10,000 ideally by the end of 21. So we're looking, we have very aggressive goals and, you know, we're assembling a really strong team and, you know, we're confident we can get there, but that's the idea. We're very much focused on, you know, the workforce housing segment. So these are going to be, you know, compared to call it a median home price in Atlanta or a major metro. We're going to be below the median, both on the price point and the rent point. So we fundamentally believe that there is a shortage of housing, not just sitting here in California, but all throughout the nation, especially at that kind of more affordable kind of workforce type housing levels. We really believe that, you know, if we can provide newly renovated homes in some of these areas at an affordable price point, that, you know, we're very confident in the demand for homes kind of that fit that box.
Are you doing only homes that need renovation, or are you also doing any build to rent?
So we are not doing build to rent, at least not currently. The model is still more the more the value add opportunities is what we're looking for. You know, we're very confident in our ability to go into these, you know, kind of, again, more suburban tertiary markets with our construction team, and go in and invest a significant amount of money into these homes, which allows us to then, play or operate in a pool or a sandbox where, those larger institutional groups just aren't active, or the retail investors, because they probably might not be willing or want to take on a large construction job. Whereas, we see that as an opportunity. So to answer your question, Matthew, not currently. And that's not to say that the model might change down the road, but our current model is more that value add in those kind of more suburban and tertiary markets.
Talk a little bit about Birmingham now. The show's specific to Birmingham. You guys are already buying and operating here in Birmingham. What is it about Birmingham that you like? You've obviously been here a number of times. So from the outsider's perspective, looking in, from somebody from California, looking at Birmingham, tell us the positives.
Well, there's a ton of opportunity in Birmingham as a whole. Also, the other metros, Huntsville, Montgomery as well. But it's one of those markets, like when we talk about the areas where the larger institutions have not kind of gone into, at least not with any scale. That is certainly one of the things that attracts us there is just the opportunity for us to buy and buy attractively in areas that fits our box. The price and rent points make sense to us as well. Again, our mission really is that more, more workforce housing. So not necessarily kind of core Birmingham, but the areas around it are really attractive to us for that reason as well. And frankly, it's just flown a little bit under the radar, at least nationally. Not so much so, more recently, but for a while there, it really did. I mean, I first visited when I came out to visit you, and it's funny. I was at the hotel bar having a beer and with one of my colleagues, and we were talking to the bartender, and they're like, "Where are you from?" And we're like, "California." And he joked. He's like, "Hey, where'd you make a wrong turn or something?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I meant to turn right in Oklahoma or something." But jokes aside, it's just one of those places that, again, historically, I don't think the national investors have spent too much time kind of uncovering what Birmingham has to offer. More recently, I think you've seen a lot more attention and kind of publicity, again, more nationwide publicity. So kind of the cat's out of the bag a little bit, I think, but there's still a lot of opportunity to be had.
From somebody who's investing from out of town, what advice would you have for them who want to invest in Birmingham or any out of town market?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the first thing would be, pick up the phone and talk to people such as you and Spencer. That's one of the things that we did back when I was buying at Waypoint. It certainly, as you guys know, is one of the things we encouraged at Roofstock as well. And one of the things that we're doing at SFR3 is, look, we have very strong and robust and detailed data systems in the way that we look at our acquisition, opportunities and potentially buying properties. That said, the way I like to think about it is kind of on a pendulum, right? So one side of the real estate pendulum is, the old way of doing things, right? Kind of, signing on dotted lines, pen and paper, shaking hands, kissing babies, that sort of thing. But then, you can swing it from that to more kind of fully automated, tech, all the AI, all the buzzwords you want to talk about. Where on kind of that continuum do you fall? We think you can swing it a lot towards the tech side, but that said, you still don't have the knowledge that people who are local to that market are going to have. So, right. Our data and algorithms might say that 123 Main Street is a good property, but you guys might know that, hey, there's a gas station across the street or there is big power lines in the backyard or something like that we're never going to be able to see. So that is certainly the biggest thing that I've learned working in kind of these remote investing areas is, you still need to pick up the phone and talk to some of the market experts.
I think that's a great point. I mean, I had a conversation with an investor, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago. He called, he was asking about this particular house in a part of town that we would recommend that people buy in. And he wanted to know, he asked me some specific questions about it. I didn't have the answer. So I called a really good friend of mine who knows every street in this area. And he was like, "Hey, I've looked at that house before." He said, "The problem is, right outside the door of that house, there's like 20 apartments and there's people loitering all around." So we were like, I gave him that information. That helped him. Like, he would have never known that had he not called. So that's a great point. Pick up the phone and call. It's great.
Well, one of the things about property managers is we don't want to manage that stuff either, right?
Right, so right,
it's not
Please
like we're just,
buy it.
Yeah, we're not trying to like create a transaction. We really don't want to get into a situation where we're having to manage things that are or homes that are problems. Our interests are very much aligned with our owners.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just going to say, like for Birmingham example, there could be, you know, really, really good pockets that you guys, you know, would know being on the ground that, hey, this area is up and coming or it's, you know, it's seeing a lot of new investment. We think it's a great opportunity to buy and you could probably, you know, maybe you get a rent that's a little bit higher than you know, what's currently, you know, being seen in the markets. Or on the flip side, you could say, you know, look, that zip code or you know, that kind of broader community is a great community. But Spencer, to your point, but that specific house or that specific street will be hard to rent for, you know, X, Y, and Z reasons.
Yeah. And the problem would have been, hey, they've come with an expectation to get X in rent. And then we would have had that market on the house. Showings would have languished. We would have gone back with the price reduction. It wouldn't have been a great relationship. So to Matthew's point, we want to have a great relationship with these owners, and delivering bad news about a bad buy is not fun for us.
There are no bad buys though, right guys? Come on.
I've done a few.
I've done several.
Well, Andy, thanks so much for your time. I think this is a great spot to wrap it up, and super excited to see what SFR3 is going to do here in Birmingham and in some other southern and Midwestern markets. And I just really appreciate your time and really appreciate you giving back to the real estate community.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on. And, you know, next time I'm out your way, I'm going to look you guys up and, you know, we'll reconnect in person once all this COVID dust settles a bit, huh?
Right. When we get great. To get back on planes.
That's right.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on this episode of the Birmingham Rental Investor. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and do that now, anywhere you listen to podcasts. So we'll see you next time.